Once he'd reported for duty, the boy charted a course back and forth from Fort Gaines to Fort Morgan, between which Admiral Farragut damned the torpedoes at the tag end of the Civil War. He was careful to steer clear of the hulking tankers headed in and out of port, his wake fading, reconstituting itself, Willie Nelson twanging in his earbuds, summer stoking up with every hour, baseball cap shading his eyes. He chuckled periodically at the jokes he told himself. At noon, he veered in the direction of his father's marina to refill his tank with gas, charge a hamburger at the snack bar, and pass a few minutes in the presence of Dana Pint, the girl I should have known would be the first to break his heart. In order to entice sport fishermen and leisure craft, the boy's father hired pretty girls to man the snack bar and the bait shop and the gas pumps at his marina. They dressed in white shorts and fitted T-shirts with the marina logo across the breast. It should be noted that the boy had known dozens of these girls over the years, admired their tan legs and their ponytails, highlighted by hours in the sun. They had flirted with him for as long as he could remember. First, because he was a child, quick to blush. Then, because he was tall, good-looking, the owner's son. Dana Pint was different. She was too skinny, for one thing, and her teeth were crooked. Her hair wasn't long enough for a ponytail. Most of the girls wore sneakers to avoid splinters on the dock, but Dana Pint went barefoot, her toes so nimble-looking the boy imagined she could use them to pick up coins. The first thing she said to the boy that summer was, "What are you looking at?" like a tough girl in some movie. He'd forgotten not to stare. She was pumping gas for a twin-engine Robolo at the time, one hand on her hip, the boy perched halfway up the steps between the dock and the snack bar. He poked the last of a hamburger in his cheek and walked down to where she stood. "Umbrag." He extended his hand. She didn't take it. "I know who you are," she said. The boy was so unused to hostility, life came so sweetly and easily to him, that he hardly recognized the resistance in her posture and her tone. Any other summer, the dock would have been lined with boats of various sizes, marina girls tending their needs, but on this day, there was only Dana Pint gassing the Robolo, rods craning up from their holders like insect legs, and the boy and his boat, a Boston Whaler skiff, a gift from his father on his 15th birthday, tied to a pylon at the end of the dock, stern tailing out into the bay on a receding tide. "Knock, knock," he said. "I've got a boyfriend. His name is Pat." "You're supposed to say who's there." I asked the boy once about his fondness for knock-knock jokes, and he said he liked how they were all the same but different, too. How words and names took on new meanings in the pattern. That may not be an exact quote, but it's close. I remember being struck by the ready astuteness of his reply, as if he had wondered the same thing about himself. Dana Pint squinted at the boy, lips pursed, a mean and wary look. "You're standing here in this heat telling me a knock-knock joke?" "That's right. I say knock-knock. You say, 'Who's there?'" The boy said, "Orange." Just then, the gas pump clicked, tank full, and Dana Pint rattled the nozzle back into its slot. For a second or two, he believed she was going to let him finish the joke. But she brushed past him and on up the steps to the snack bar, splay-footed, legs so thin he could see inches of daylight between her thighs. When he wasn't patrolling the bay, the boy could be found in his basement lifting weights, bulking up for the last football season of his high school career. He played tackle on both sides of the ball, or pulling his friends on an inner tube around Dog River, whipping his boat in tight, thrilling centrifugal turns, the other boys grim-faced, the girls squealing in their bikinis. And sometimes, on Fridays, after he finished his rounds,